Good morning, New York.
I'm Lisa Geffner.
And I'm Carolyn Kirsch. We're partners in a matrimonial law firm, and we represent individuals involved with all issues under the divorce and family law umbrella. We've been working together for 17 amazing years, and we've had the opportunity to help so many people.
Welcome to Divorce and Happily Ever After, where we provide you with our insight about family, relationships, and how divorce can create an opportunity for personal growth and moving on to your next chapter. So first and foremost, I have to apologize to our audience today. I completely lost my voice last night.
We were celebrating the five-year anniversary of Geffner Kirsch, and we had about 50 to 70 people for a party, and we had Dirty Taco, which was very exciting. We had a reggae band, and I think Elisa forced herself a little too hard to talk over the band, and she lost her voice.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's really exciting. It's been 5 years of Geffner Kirsch, but as we say in our opening dialogue whenever, you know, when we do this show is that we've been together for 17, and Carolyn sometimes says amazing. Sometimes she doesn't say anything. Maybe a few more adjectives flow, but she doesn't say them. And, you know, we do have somewhat of a unique thing going in partnership, which is not lost on me ever. Not very many people have this. We have been together for 17 years. Geffner Kirsch has been around for five. So, you know, it's sort of been a way in which we've developed this ability to run our practice successfully, and it's ever growing, and it's a really exciting thing. We had our staff there.
And everyone had a great time. I think what makes Elisa and I so unique is, as she said, we're not just business partners, we're also best friends. We travel together. Our kids are like cousins to one another. I babysit Elisa's dog. And I think the synergy that we have definitely transfers into our business. And even when we started our business, you know, Elisa and I never even had a discussion about what duties she was going to handle and what I would be responsible for. She just kind of did what she did. I did what I did. And somehow everything got covered. So it's nice. And I think we're just so lucky that everything is so seamless and it transfers to everything we do. And I think that that's why, you know, we've been successful over these years. It's just because we work so well together as a team, you know. And you hear people say that all the time. There's no I in team. And Elisa and I truly, you know, work as a team. It's never, you know, if I have to pick up something for Elisa.
But there is an I in winning. And we like to win for our clients.
We sure do.
No, we were talking to one of our friends. And Carolyn was saying something. And I looked at her and I said, she's just so different than me sometimes. And our friend says, well, that's why it works. Because I think where she picks up, where I drop off, she picks up and vice versa. We definitely have a good way of handling our clients, and they get the benefit of both of us. And that's been able to give us sort of that stream of people who count on us and, rely upon us. And then we were just talking, you know, about this amazing five-year anniversary we had. And the reason we had it was because we wanted to not only just celebrate our 5 years, but the people who have helped us with that. And that's another important component of that.
And we say that every time when we have these events is to thank everyone, because we'd be nothing without all of the great people around us. You know, we do matrimonial and family law, but we don't do any other aspects of law or any other businesses. We're not mortgage brokers. We don't sell homes. And just having an amazing network that you can trust these people with your, you know, to your clients to refer them is huge. And we say it all the time, you know, a bad referral, you know, is just, it's a terrible thing. It's also a reflection on the person making that referral. So Elisa and I are very careful if we give a recommendation to our clients or family and friends to any professional. It's someone that, you know, we have experience with, that we know has the knowledge, the expertise, and can handle the person appropriately, and that we're going to be proud of.
And we also had our support staff there, the people, and we have one in particular, Christine, who we'll give a shout out to, who has been with us for probably the majority of our career. So of the 17 years, I mean, I'm sure she's been with us 12, 13, 14 years, and she's really seen that growth and the development and has been there with us at the inception of Geffner Kirsch and really, you know, helping us to manage our firm.
And what's funny about Christine is whenever we're together, we were at our old firm at the time, and Elisa and I would be whispering, you know, not to be loud, and Christine would walk in, and, you know, we'd still be whispering. She's like, I can't even hear what the two of you are saying. Like, you could just speak telepathically to one another. So Christine's had to deal with all of Carolyn and Elisa.
It is certainly, as she calls us, the twin tornadoes.
We come in, we wreak havoc, and we leave.
Yeah, so, but circling back, you know, on just our business network and people, we have a great guest today.
We have Leslie Tain, and she is the managing partner of Tain Law Group. It's a premier Long Island debt resolution firm. She's also a published author and is universally recognized by her peers as being the expert in debt resolution. So I think she's a really exciting guest. She has a lot of knowledge, and it's something that I think is very relatable to a lot of you.
Yeah, and talking just, you know, when I talk to people about our firm and about us, and they just say it's really nice to see like two women in business, powerful women in business. And last night we saw that we were surrounded, and Leslie included, by a lot of those really powerful women in business who have made it to the top, have followed through, and it's exciting to be in those circles and to see those people. And definitely Leslie is a treasure trove of information in what she does.
We're looking forward to speaking to her.
So we're going to have to switch gears. And I know the format normally is that we talk about some fun sort of light celebrity news or news relating to divorce or families and so on. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention what's been going on in our media recently with regard to the now death, confirmed death of Gabby Petito. It has been a really, really serious, sensationalized issue in the media, on social media, the track of her and going back. I think now social media has given people the ability to see life before much more than they would in murder cases or cases of this nature. So for people who are following this news story relating to Gabby, who's this, you know, beautiful blonde 22-year-old woman who is engaged to be married to Brian Laundrie.
And talking about the social media, she was also an influencer. I think hers was like hashtag van life or something like that, where she would talk about her vacations and everywhere she traveled in her van. So it's even more so that she was, you know, capturing what she was doing that I know you're going to go through now.
Yeah, a lot of people, I guess, are, you know, over the summer and doing all that kind of stuff. And there is a big connection to that, and I think a draw with respect to that type of lifestyle. So, you know, just as a timeline for people who aren't really following it, you know, in June and July, she had posted her first pictures of this van trip that she was doing with Brian to a road trip to Kansas. She actually left here from New York, and there's a big New York connection here. The Suffolk County Police Department are involved in it. They both had lived here prior in Suffolk County and left from here. And she starts chronicling her journey and all these really cool, fun, nice, happy pictures of her and her fiance and moving through this. And then it kind of seemed that it sort of turned in the middle of August, and there, you know, about August 12th, there was this encounter with the police, a domestic dispute that was called in anonymously, where the police were called in, and there was a video of this showing her in the back seat of their van crying and in tears. And Laundrie had said she had hit him with his cell phone. Neither of them had, you know, called the police or filed for charges, but I believe on the video, the police had said, okay, well, the two of you should separate. What's interesting about this is now I'm told in the media there's this new tie-in of another couple who are recently married, also, I guess, living sort of this nomadic van life, hippie type life. And they were actually in that same park on that same day, and they wound up murdered. And they're looking into if there's any, and it hasn't been ruled out if there's any relation to that. It's also interesting that we hear now about this couple who were murdered around that same time. There's a connection, I believe, to the two couples being at the same place at the same time when this call was made on that day. But we hadn't heard about that. Those murders until now. We're dealing with this Gabby Petito and her, you know, was missing, and now her death, and Brian Laundrie being on the loose. So then what happens is her mother gets text message about August 30th, a very strange text message saying that something that I think her mother just didn't believe was coming from her, about where she was, her location didn't match what she believed of where her daughter was supposed to be. And then this kind of takes this weird, interesting turn where supposedly Brian returns to his parents' home in Florida with the van and without Gabby. And then eventually her mother reports her missing, and the body was just recently found. And what happened today?
They confirmed from the autopsy that it was a homicide, but they're still saying that Brian is an interested person, but he's not necessarily, you know, a suspect at the time.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, just us as divorce, as family attorneys, I'll say.
We hear a lot of these issues. So, you know, we don't just hear about divorce. People call us with any family issues, some that are, you know, an issue that we can handle or not. And this is, you know, this is such a tragic story. And, you know, as like we said, as family lawyers, we come up with all of these different issues. And over our career, unfortunately, we have heard a lot of sad stories. You know, I've had divorce cases where, you know, the parties are going through a divorce and one of the parties dies, which abates the divorce proceeding. There was one case that I got called in. I was covering it for another lawyer in my firm, and the mother was going to be dying. You know, she had a terminal illness and she was going to die, and the judge actually called in the case for trial, recognizing that if the mother died, that it would abate the divorce and the father would essentially, you know, be able to claim any joint assets, the house, things of that nature. So it put me in a pretty crazy position where the case wasn't even trial ready. There's certain things that need to be filed with the county clerk to say that you're trial ready. None of that was done. And the judge said, take me to the appellate division. So we hear a lot of these sad cases. And then, of course, you have the cases where, unfortunately, a child dies. And it's...
Well, that's what I was about to say, was just about the fact that, you know, thinking about Petito's family, her parents now, and what they're going through.
I can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine what that feels like. You know, from a divorce perspective, we do see a lot of, not a lot of people, but people through the years who have lost children, and how those parents deal with that loss. You know, you either kind of grow together or you grow apart, and some people do mourn very differently, and sometimes it's too much to bear, and divorce is the next option. And I always just feel, you know, it's so sad that you go through this tragic event and, you know, and then you're getting divorced, and the children that, you know, are surviving and lost their sister or brother. I mean, the whole thing's heartbreaking.
So, the police are still looking out for Brian. We don't know whether he's alive or dead at the moment. Certainly, if he is alive, this is going to lead into a whole nother next section of how this is going to be handled, treated, and what's going to go on from a legal perspective against him. So we might have to have a lot of follow-up on this, because as lawyers, trial lawyers, we're both trial lawyers, both of us having a little bit of a criminal background in some senses. You know, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how all this pans out, especially if he is alive and ultimately arrested, which I think is going to happen, and then moving forward from there. So like we said, we're really excited to have one of our close friends and colleagues, Leslie Tain, here today to talk about one of the most impactful things on divorce, which is debt and divorce. Thank you, Leslie, for being here. We're so excited to have you. Debt is a huge thing in divorce for us, and it's the hardest thing for us is splitting up debt. It's always easy to split up assets, but splitting up the debt and how we do that is very, very challenging for us. And we get a lot of questions from our clients. I have a client right now whose husband had declared bankruptcy during the divorce, and she has a lot of questions. We're in the process of trying to sell her home. How, if at all, does his filing of bankruptcy affect her or help her or hurt her?
So in that case, when one spouse files for bankruptcy, the question would be, what, if any, are joint debts? So if there are debts just in his name and he filed for bankruptcy and his bankruptcy was discharged, that would only impact him. However, if there are joint debts, meaning debts that they both are responsible for, and he, as one party, files for bankruptcy and receives a discharge, she, the other spouse, will be fully responsible for that debt. So the creditor can then go after that spouse, that surviving spouse from the bankruptcy who didn't file. That creditors can go solely after that spouse.
So in this particular case, and I guess we're in the process of doing some type of title lien search, I guess. So he filed for bankruptcy, let's say that there are some joint debts that were discharged but not from her, there could potentially be liens on the home.
There could be liens against the home still. That's true. So if she had debt in her name, or again, they had joint debt that turned into a judgment, which could turn into a lien against the property, yes, that lien is still there. The lien doesn't necessarily get lifted because of the bankruptcy. The debt gets discharged in bankruptcy, but not necessarily the lien, especially if there is a joint debtor attached to that. So that's definitely something that you have to look into a little bit more carefully in terms of what now does this mean for any properties or other judgments that are out there. So if they're both were sued, let's say hypothetically there was a credit card debt and they were both sued and they received a judgment against them, and one debtor files for bankruptcy, that judgment still exists against the other debtor. It hasn't been, it's not because you file bankruptcy and you're married that both spouses are included. So, because one spouse, as in your case, can file bankruptcy without the other. So the debt still exists and the lien can still exist. So it's definitely something to be aware of. And it's not an uncommon scenario where I have somebody come to me on the debt end and say, hey, I was married, I had a spouse that filed for bankruptcy. What does this really mean for me? And who's responsible for the debt now?
So that lien will get paid from the proceeds once it's sold, if it's on the home.
If it's on the home and there's actually proceeds available, you could satisfy the lien. You'd have to, because you won't be able to transfer the property, obviously, with the lien against it. But you could potentially negotiate it, which is what I do, is go in and advise and then negotiate that lien to reduce the balance owed, because now there's really only one judgment debtor and we don't really know the value of the home. And as a general rule, most creditors don't foreclose on property. So it's a paper lien and it's sort of sitting there until there's incentive or motivation by the judgment debtor, right, like in a divorce, to sell the property. But in that case, you know, I negotiate those regularly to reduce the balances so that there's more net proceeds at the end of the day when the property is sold.
Have you ever been in a or seen where it's been recommended that both spouses file for bankruptcy to eliminate this problem?
So in some cases, it really depends on what's happening financially. Bankruptcy is a very extreme result of debt. And in many cases, it stays on your credit from 7 to 10 years. And when you're trying to rehabilitate yourself post-divorce, bankruptcy isn't always an advisable strategy to resolve debt. During the divorce and post-divorce, I understand the challenges of having debt and how to deal with it. But it's not always the best way to go. So it really depends on what's happening. And you would want to definitely take a look at what's happening, you know, what the money situation is during the divorce, post-divorce, and what the need is for credit. Because remember, there are licenses that can be impacted by bankruptcies, the ability to get if that property is sold and that your client or the judgment debtor now wants to go into a rental, that's going to be challenging with a bankruptcy. If they want to buy another property, that's going to be super challenging with a bankruptcy. You know, it would, and in many cases, a substantial amount of debt might make sense, but usually on the smaller ends, and that's dependent on the individual circumstances.
And that's where you come in.
Yeah, an alternative to bankruptcy is definitely worth pursuing because you have a lot more control. And during the divorce, things are always crazy. So financially, things are very tight. There's a lot of unknown. Everybody is stressed out. But post-divorce, as the individuals come out of the divorce process, there all of a sudden the financial situation starts to improve. And you have a lot more control when you're not going through a bankruptcy process.
And when we have clients that have significant debt, we do send them to you to deal with, because it is so hard to reconcile. And what's that process like for those clients? What do you do for them? How does that work?
So the way that I help those clients is that we really take a good look at what's going on. We want to understand what everybody's goals are. So in a divorce situation, to rehab is really the biggest goal. In order to have good credit, you have to manage the debt. So when debt is out of control from a marriage or a deteriorating marriage or post divorce, we want to take a look at the types of debt that they have, you know, what the budget is, how much money is available. And the biggest piece of the puzzle that's most successful is the ability to reduce how much they're paying out. So even if the debts are current, I can reduce the amount of money that they're paying out and free up cash flow so that they can put that money towards, let's say, a new living situation. I can renegotiate the debts with the creditors, reduce the balances, get the interest to zero, and place them in a totally different financial situation.
And a lot of people always ask about, you know, credit cards that are open. Is it advisable to close a credit card. Some people say that it actually helps you by opening a credit card. What is the truth on all those points?
So that's a really good question, because there's a lot of concern by people about closing credit cards that it actually reduces your credit score. And it does, by like 5 points or 10 points, but never enough that it's impactful. However, the time that it does become more significant is the credit history. So if you've had that credit card for 20 years and then you close it, you close a 20-year history account. But the actual point droppage is so low that it's not a reason not to close the card, especially in divorce cases. If I have a client that's getting divorced, more often than not, the advice is to close the card, especially if there's their joint accounts or their joint card holders or there's an authorized user. Of course, I understand the orders from the court earlier on that you can't dispose of certain marital assets and things, so you have to do it in conjunction. But the reality is, if you're getting divorced and there's no order in place and the debt is in your name and your spouse has access to that and is not in control of the spending, the reality is you should close those cards, because the net impact of having the debt accumulate on your credit versus closing the card is there's no comparison.
And what about opening cards?
So opening cards takes a credit hit but it's, again, they're so small, these credit hits, they're not impactful enough not to do it. If you're trying to open 10 cards, that's going to be a really big negative impact. But one card means that one creditor is checking your credit. It's a hard inquiry, it's called. There's a hard inquiry and soft inquiry. A hard inquiry is when you're looking for actual credit. So that will reduce your credit a little bit. But every month, the credit score goes up and down anyway, naturally, by things that are within and outside of your control. So just spending on your credit cards will change your credit score. So closing a card will drop the credit score by 5 or 10 points. And that's not enough to really be that impactful.
What is the most impactful thing to your credit?
A foreclosure, repossessions.
What about credit card wise? Just carrying a lot of debt?
Carrying a lot of debt. Your debt to income ratio is off. Your utilization rate. The utilization rate is how much credit you have versus what you've used. So if you have $10,000 available on a credit card and you've used $9,000 of it, you're at a 90% utilization rate, which that will definitely drop your score. 25 different credit cards, and I have clients with 25 or 30 different credit cards, that will keep your score down for sure.
And, you know, talking about the divorce process and coming out of it, what would you say, how to manage your finances after divorce? How does that work? What's the best things to do?
So the way to manage finances post-divorce is really there's a number of steps to it. The first step is during divorce, trying to anticipate what life is going to be like post-divorce, what you anticipate having. Now, obviously, when they have good counsel like you two ladies and somebody's talking to them about what they can expect through and post-divorce, as a generalization, they understand how much money is going to be available and what their living circumstances is. So you want to understand how much money is going to be available so that you can budget appropriately. If you're not budgeting and you're not aware how much money is going to come into your household and what's going to go out of your household, then you're going to have some financial challenges because you're not going to be in control of the money. So the first step is to really have a kind of an idea of what to expect. Are you staying in the house? Are you moving? Are there moving expenses? Who's responsible for the debt? Are you going to have debt responsibility? Do you have child?
That's a question, actually, just not to interrupt you, but interrupt you. A lot of times if we have like $40,000 of debt, do you ever see where, like, I guess sometimes like you roll it into your own card in your own name because it was in the other spouse's name, and so you are in charge and splitting debt. You know, what happens with that?
So if you're rolling the debt into your name, the only time I would ever recommend something like that is if you were ordered to pay that debt and the other side would be thrilled to have you take it out of their name. Because one of the things I always say divorce is, even though you're getting divorced and the divorce agreement says that your ex-spouse is responsible for the debt, you should get it out of your name as fast as possible because you don't have any control over whether your spouse pays it. And yes, of course, you could go back to court and spend the money to try to enforce the agreement, but that doesn't do anything to the damage to your credit if your spouse doesn't pay the debts they were ordered to pay, including houses, credit cards, student loans, and things like that. So if you're in the position where you're not responsible for the debt, part of the agreement should be that the other spouse has to get the debt into their name.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. If that's not possible, and it's not always possible. Sometimes you have a spouse that doesn't have the credit to do that. And I see that often with houses where there is now a situation where the house was supposed to be sold, it didn't get sold, or was supposed to be refinanced, and now they can't refinance it because they have a credit problem. So how do you enforce that if they can't? No one will lend them the money to refinance the property. And right. Now you have the other spouse who doesn't want to be responsible or have anything to do with this anymore, is stuck. And, you know, even in an enforcement situation where you go back to court, you can't then order a bank to give somebody money.
You have to contemplate these things in the
ahead of time. Yeah. Right, right. And that's where a good agreement comes in. When you're really looking at the what ifs, what if my spouse is in a situation, look at COVID, lost a job, lots of people lost their jobs, loss of income. No way that if there was a divorce agreement that said in 2020 you needed to refinance that was going to happen. So unless you were under fantastic financial circumstances, and even now getting refinancing is a challenge. So with that said, there's a lot of variables that could impact the financial pieces of the puzzle. So to be aware of that ahead of time and manage it and be on top of it is the only way to stay out of debt.
And so, you know, Leslie, the name of our show is Divorce and Happily Ever After.
Uh-huh.
You're divorced. You're remarried. You have three amazing kids. You have stepkids. And you
and
always...
lots of amazing puppies. Dogs.
Which we have to talk about.
Five. I have five dogs from the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs, which I most happily raise.
Yeah.
So how do you stay balanced? How do you balance your work life, your home life, your kids? What's your advice?
So I was divorced when my kids were only 5 and 7, and I have twins, and I was a single parent for a very long time building my business and my practice and focusing on raising my kids. I had full custody of my children. It's not an easy thing to balance, but I was very happy. I was very happy on the other side of divorce. It was the right situation for me. I had my children to myself. I was really thrilled to have the opportunity to raise them. And I grew my business, and it really requires organization and a lot of structure. And I'm very organized and very structured, and I think those are my secrets to success there. And I really tried to be close to home, where my office was close to home, and I could leave during the day to see the kids if I needed to, and really trying to get the kids on board with you know, the fact that mom works and does important things. And so I am on the other side of the happily after divorced.
And how do you manage, you know, your stress? How do you take care of you? Like, do you have a secret for that? That, you know, you have some outlet that you feel, you know, enables you to walk back in that home and feel recharged.
So it's very important to take care of yourself. You cannot neglect yourself in the chaos of raising children, working, and being either a single parent or divorced. It's not an easy thing. So you have to, for me, I am an avid cyclist, indoor cyclist. So from SoulCycle to Peloton, those were my outlets. And I like to get away. So I like the warm weather to thaw off in the winter and would take breaks without the kids. And that was really helpful in getting my mind focused and being able to take care of me and looking for different ways that I could really recharge myself so that I would be the best parent I could be and also the best businesswoman I could be.
I remember when we first met you and we said, oh my God, she must sleep standing up, because as you walk in with your puppy that you're raising from the Guide Dog Foundation.
Tell us about that quickly, like what you do.
So I raise puppies for the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs. They are they're wonderful organizations that provide service animals to those with all different types of disabilities, from visual impairments, and on the vet side, veterans who've been honorably discharged, who have all different types of disabilities. And so the organization breeds their own dogs, and I happily take the puppies in and raise them, foster them, begin their training process, and love them. And then they go off to more formal training and become a service dog.
And I will thank you for my puppy, who's now 4 years old, that I was able to adopt from the Guide Dog Foundation, because she couldn't be trained through that program. And I appreciate it every day. She is the best dog.
They are the best animals in the whole world. And that was a medical release. And we do release dogs. They have to be really perfect for somebody with a disability, and it's a very successful program, and I'm absolutely not just an advocate, but I'm in love with the whole program and process. So I'm happy that you're happy with your doggy, and those in need, really, it's a life changer. It's so life altering. And my thought in it is to give them as much love as possible so that when they get to their ultimate person, they will give that person the love that I gave to them as puppies.
That's a good way to close the segment. Thank you so much, Leslie, for being here. Can you just tell the audience where they could find you and get in touch with you?
Sure. So you can find me anywhere on the web, but my website is tainlaw.com. And we have offices normally all over, but you can certainly reach us on anywhere from LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and at tainlaw.com.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We want to thank all you guys for being here and being listening to our program today. You can find us on divorceandhappilyeverafter.com. We have there an ability for you to put in your suggestions, comments, any topics that you want to hear about. You could go there and make an inquiry, and we will be happy to answer your questions.
And if you need any divorce advice, you can check us out at geffnerkirsch.com, or you can call us at our office, 516-268-9898. We have offices in Garden City and Millville.